This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're inside a week, folks. Monday, November 4th, 7 p.m. Radford comes to the Pete as Pitt basketball opens up the 2024-2025 season. Breaking it all down with George Michalowski of the Portal Report, and he covers Pitt hoops for Pittsburgh Sports Now. George, good to talk to you again, my friend. Pitt, 93-62, a win in an exhibition over now D2 Point Park. They win in a secret scrimmage over Cincinnati. I know you didn't see the secret scrimmage against Cincy, but against Point Park, more of a public display. What's going on with these Pitt basketball team as we get set to open up the season, man? Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Jack. Things are looking up. Things are looking in a positive direction for Pitt. Heading into the season, they're looking for their third straight 20-win season under Capel. This will be year seven. So at this point, you know, I think Pitt feels pretty comfortable with their decision to keep Capel leading the program. And like you said, two big wins on these preseason exhibitions and the scrimmage against Cincinnati over the weekend. You know, they're looking to win upwards of 20 games this year. I think this team's expectations are to go to the second weekend or further in the NCAA tournament. They want to leave no doubt. That's what they've been saying all offseason. So things are looking up. Several big-time contributors in the game so far. And I really like the pieces that they got on the squad this year.
Now, as far as these secret scrimmages go, George, they've kind of become something that we keep an eye on and become more relevant the last couple of years. How much stock should fans put into those once those results become reported on by people like yourself? And can you shed a little light onto maybe what goes on in those secret scrimmages? Like, are they going all out, or is it one of those things where it's a controlled environment, closed door, and the players really aren't just trying to, you know, hurt themselves before the season?
Yeah, for sure. So usually it's played at a neutral site about halfway between the two schools. Pitt played Cincinnati this week at Case Western up in Cleveland. So they basically play in front of nobody. A lot of coaches, whether it's an excuse or it's the truth, a lot of coaches like to say that these scrimmages are usually for, you know, experimenting with different lineups and, you know, plugging some guys in that maybe won't play a lot during the season. But I don't know. I heard Bobby Hurley, who's coaching Arizona State, they actually lost to Duke in one of these. It was a public scrimmage, but they lost by like 60 points. And Bobby Hurley said yesterday, I wasn't experimenting. Like, we got a lot of work to do. So that was refreshing to hear. They go hard. Everything that I've heard about these scrimmages at all levels, like these coaches are setting these up throughout the late summer and throughout the fall, trying to get a good look at like what they can expect out of their team. Now in Pitt's case, like playing Cincinnati, that's a good team to stack yourself up against. This is a team that was ranked number 20, that is ranked number 20 in the preseason poll, that's expected in the top half to finish in the top half of the Big 12. Now, I did hear that Day-Day Thomas, one of the senior guards for Cincinnati, did not play against Pitt in this scrimmage. You don't want to put too much stock in it to answer your question. But no doubt, I mean, the teams were trying to win. And from everything that I heard about the scrimmage for Pitt and saw, I mean, Pitt, well, it's funny, once these teams win the scrimmages, sometimes you'll see information start to get out. Not as much so when they lose.
Yeah, like the video highlights.
right. But they put out video, like you said, and you could see all of Pitt's main contributors who we expected to be on the court and we expect to be on the court on November 4th were in the game, like making big plays, you know, having big reactions after big plays. Pitt held off Cincinnati from what I heard from the scrimmage. They held off a pretty ferocious Cincinnati comeback. in the second half and came back on their own. So I definitely think they're feeling great about how that scrimmage went. But yeah, I mean, you can never put too much stock into something that doesn't actually count.
George Michalowski of the Portal Report in Pittsburgh Sports Now with us on the Fan Hotline. George, I know right before Bub got drafted, you had him on your podcast and he talked about this team without him this year. And Bub raved about the potential depth that Pitt had. And we saw a bunch of guys in the Point Park scrimmage or exhibition get into the fold. And it really does seem like Bub was telling the truth. It seems like these guys might be 9-10 deep when it's all said and done. Would you agree?
I would. I wouldn't. I don't know if I'll go 9-10. I think there's some guys toward the end of the bench that a lot of fans seem to really like, and they could be great contributors in the future. I do think 7-8 players will be getting significant minutes, including a local guy, Brandon Cummings. I think from what we saw in the exhibition, their depth is great, like you said, and like Bub was talking about. But I think at guard, like, they're going to need Brandon Cummings to be a good player. And that's something that I didn't really know coming into this offseason, coming into this season. I was like, all right, well, they need the freshman to contribute. But I think Biba Cummings will play. I think Amsel Dalalic will play a lot. There's guys like Papa Amadou Kanté and even Jorge Diaz-Graham, Amde Njai, who I don't know how much those three will really get in just because the front court is so dynamic already. I mean, you've got a guy, Cam Corin, coming in who didn't play more than 21 minutes a game, I believe, last year at Florida State. But that guy, I mean, Pitt is really high on him. He played almost 28 minutes in the exhibition. I anticipate they're going to want him to be near 30 minutes a game. Guillermo Diaz-Graham started alongside him, kind of playing the four, which is a different look than last year. So tons of depth on this team in the front court, in the wing room too, with Austin, with Dame John, Jorge Diaz-Graham, like I said, and then Dalalic when he gets back from his hand injury. So lots of depth there. The guard room too. Brandon Cummings, like I said, would be the fourth guard rotating in after Lowe, after Leggett, and then Dunn. So, I mean, this team's got a lot of depth. It's hard to find a weakness right now. I think the main thing that they're going to be focusing on in the early season is, one, making sure Corin is very aggressive down low, because as we saw in that second half of the exhibition, an aggressive Cam Corin is the most effective Cam Corin. Like, that guy can be a force. He can be a force on the boards. He can be a force inside. So I think they're going to be looking for him to take that step with a bigger role than he had at Florida State. But yeah, man, there's depth all over the court for these guys.
Now, last year with this team, we saw Ishmael Leggett in the starting lineup. He goes down and misses some time with an injury. But after that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it seemed like Ish was sort of the sixth guy, the sixth man, and the first guy off the bench. Now, do you anticipate, and had success doing it, now do you anticipate him maybe cracking the starting lineup and it having maybe an expanded upon role for this team this year?
Yeah, right. I mean, he got Wally Pipped, right? The famous story from the baseball world.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was as much of Leggett doing anything wrong or suffering from that injury too much. I think Jalen Lowe was just a very, very talented freshman that wasn't even all the way healthy in the beginning of the year. Like, he's told us it took him about three quarters of the way through the season for him to feel like pretty close to full health. So obviously Jalen Lowe took that step and performed at a very high level, beyond his years toward the end of the season. Leggett's a standout player. I think he's comfortably in that starting lineup. I mean, Pitt's had two straight ACC Sixth Men of the Year with Nike Sabandian, with Ish Leggett. That may continue with Dame Dunn this year if he comes off the bench for Pitt. I'm really high on Dunn. I think Pitt is too. 2 years ago at Temple in his last year, so he didn't have that big of a role at Houston last year. It was a crowded backcourt, a really, really talented team, one of the best teams in the country all year. But 2 years ago, in his last year at Temple, I mean, he was like a 39-40% shooter off the catch on three-point attempts. And everyone said this year, all right, Pitt loses Hinson. What are they going to do about shooting? Well, don't look too far. I mean, Damian Dunn is a really good catch and shoot player. He can also, you know, score off the dribble, and he can set up his teammates. He's a good ball handler, and he's a veteran guard, right? Like, you win with these veteran guards, like Ish Leggett, like Damian Dunn. So they've got a lot of options in the backcourt. I think Ish Leggett is, again, primed for a big year. I mean, the other day he played, what, almost 30 minutes, 24 points and 9 rebounds from a guard. Like, he's just settled into this level of basketball that's expected of him in the ACC, which Jeff Capel even said, like, that's an adjustment coming up from the A-10 when he transferred from Rhode Island last year. So I think most of this team, which is a huge advantage for Pitt in this day and age in college basketball, most of this team's main contributors, I mean, I'm talking the top six guys now, are 100% acclimated to high major basketball. That's something that you could not say last year with Zach Austin coming from High Point, with some of the freshmen that didn't play much, like the twins the year before, and then with Jalen and Bub, like those guys, and Ish Leggett. There was a lot of uncertainty in competition level and what it takes to win at the highest level of college basketball. This year, Pitt knows, you know, what it takes. Corhin went to Florida State. Like, he played in the ACC. He knows what the big dogs are going to throw at him. Damian Dunn played at Houston, played 4 years at Temple. Like, this group knows how to get it done at the highest level. So I think there's a lot of intriguing pieces here.
George Michalowski joining us, talking Pitt hoops. He covers Pitt basketball for Pittsburgh Sports Now, also part of the Portal Report. Last year, George, a lot of the criticism from guys like Joe Lenardi and the bracketologists why Pitt didn't make the tournament was the lack of strength of schedule in the non-conference, and it doesn't seem like that's the case this year, especially in the early going with West Virginia and then a trip south to the Greenbrier.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, they've got five straight high major games in November and early December. Like, that first ACC game is Virginia Tech. That's a winnable game. They could very well come out of that stretch with some quad one, some really quality quad two wins early on. I mean, they got LSU and then UCF or Wisconsin, both at the Greenbrier. At Ohio State will be a quad one game. At Mississippi State should be a quad one game. Like, these are very, very good games and competitive teams that they're playing against. And I also talked a bit about this earlier in the year or in the summer on the station here about the mid-major teams they're playing. Not as much of cupcakes as we've seen in the past. Like, Sam Houston, great mid-major program. Eastern Kentucky, solid mid-major program. Murray State's a really, really consistent program. So some of these wins might just give them a little bit more of an edge. And I talked to Joe Lenardi about it also this summer. Like, Pitt just needs to win those games by a lot. But because they're just a little bit better in terms of mid-major and then low-major schools, it's going to help them. And then needless to say, the high majors on their schedule are competitive. They're all winnable in my eyes. I think there's going to be tough games, especially traveling to Columbus and traveling to Starkville to face Mississippi State. But yeah, man, I think they did a good job scheduling this year. And I see a chance for them to have a really, really successful top five season in the ACC as well.
And as the ACC kind of takes shape, the preseason poll obviously out, how do you assess the conference? And it really does seem like Duke and North Carolina are kind of leading the pack as far as the talent goes. And is everybody else sort of chasing them, or are there other teams near the top that you think that could contend for an ACC title?
Yeah, I mean, Duke is unbelievably talented this year. I think this will be the best Duke team we've seen in a few years. North Carolina, again, RJ Davis coming back, like, it'd be hard to not pick him for player of the year in the conference. North Carolina is going to be loaded again. I really like Wake Forest and Clemson this year. I mean, those round out the top four in the AP poll or in the preseason ACC poll. Not as high on the NC States of the world, that kind of second tier, I would say. Pretty low on Virginia. I mean, the Tony yeah. Bennett news is killer for that program. I know a lot of people love Tony Bennett out there, but man, that really, in my eyes, like, left that program in a really tough spot. Jalen Worley entered the portal today, from Virginia. He was a previous player at Florida State who transferred in, so not too high on Virginia. But I think Louisville is going to be better than they've been with Pat Kelsey. I think teams like Syracuse, Georgia Tech, and Notre Dame are all kind of trending upwards from where they were at last year. So that middle-of-the-pack ACC needs to be stronger for this league, you know, to gain more respect. And I think it will. Like, Pitt was seventh in the ACC preseason poll, if I remember. And I think they can be top five. I think they can be top four. So I think you're right. Duke and North Carolina are going to be near the top. With that being said, I don't think they're, you know, invincible at the top of this league. And I think those other teams, Wake Forest, Clemson, I think Pitt deserves to be mentioned in the same conversations as those two.
Before we let you go, George, I want to ask you about Jeff Capel. One of the things, you know, growing up loving this program and following them a little bit more in depth as you get older, one of the things I think that's been remarkable about Jeff Capel is the fact that his original coaching staff of his brother Jason, Tim O'Toole, Milan Brown, 7+ years later, all of these guys are together with some additions. Gilbert Brown obviously coming back, and Kyle Chiplicky, I think is how you say his name. But that original coaching staff didn't leave. They are still here. Why do you think that is? And what about Jeff Capel, you know, breeds that kind of consistency with the coaches?
Yeah, man, I wrote about this a few weeks ago. The staff is very tight-knit. The assistant coaches have had opportunities to leave for head coaching gigs, but they've all stuck around. I mean, it's three main assistants: Tim O'Toole, Milan Brown, and his brother Jason have all known him forever. Their relationships are all like intertwined in the Capel family. Like Milan Brown, you know, coached for Jeff's dad 25 years ago or so. Jason obviously is his brother. Tim coached Jeff when Jeff was at Duke. Like, these guys have known each other forever. They believe in Jeff. Jeff believes in them. They've all got pretty, you know, family-oriented lives. And I think they all just believe in this program. They haven't wavered at all from, you know, basically Jeff's plan from the beginning. They obviously went through some stuff that wasn't good. And a lot of people were calling for his job and, you know, some of their jobs too. Back around 2020 and 2021 when this program wasn't winning under Capel yet. But, man, they're a tight-knit group. They know basketball. They have a lot of – I mean, all three of those assistants that I mentioned have head coaching experience at the Division I level. Kyle Chiplicky was associate head coach up in Vermont. You know, this staff has experience from all over. There's a real strong culture that they've built. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, I think these guys like where they're at. They like working with Jeff. I would say four there usually, but it really feels like a collaborative, you know, movement they've got going where they're all just kind of working with each other. So, yeah, man, it's an impressive staff and it's an impressive feat in this day and age of basketball. Like, the assistant coach carousel is very, very wild. And everything I've seen from this group at Pitt, you know, has kind of gone against the status quo there of guys jumping at different jobs and moving up the ladder personally. So they're very blessed to be in the position that they're in with this staff. And I think Capel is very lucky to have all these guys by his side going into year seven. So,
George Michalowski, you can check him out at Pittsburgh Sports Now and The Portal Report. George, always a pleasure, my man. Looking forward to seeing you at some games this year, and thanks for hopping on as always. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Jack. Appreciate it, man.
Yep, there he goes. That's George Michalowski. Check him out on X at MichalowskiCBB. He does a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Well, during our chat with George, Anthony Volpe, who, again, I'm not a Yankees guy. I actually think the Yankees are obnoxious, and I think the Yankees are as obnoxious as it gets in professional sports. But Anthony Volpe, being the Yankees shortstop and growing up in that area and growing up a diehard Yankees fan, is pretty damn cool. Like, I put myself in the shoes of when I thought that I could be a professional athlete, and I was in my driveway making basketball shots, shouting out play-by-play like I was playing for Jamie Dixon. Like, we all have those dreams when we're kids, and Anthony Volpe's like living it out, which I think is unbelievable. He hits a, what was it, a three-run home run or a grand slam, Joel? I think it,
grand
it was,
slam.
It was a grand slam because it's 5-2. So Volpe hits a grand slam in the bottom of the third, and it's 5-2 Yankees now. And you know what? I am so freaking glad that that dipwad that pried the ball out of Mookie Betts' hands and his idiot buddy got thrown out of the game and they weren't in there to see it. I can't tell you how thrilled I am that that jackaloon didn't get to see that in person. Texter coming in a little bit ago saying the Yankees got thrown out of the stadium. Texter, thank you. And I did see the video of him getting escorted out by what looked like some law enforcement and some stadium officials as well. Dodgers have a base runner, though, top of the fourth with one away. And the Penguins trying to make this thing interesting. 7:43 to go. They're down 4-3, but the Wild are on a power play. Always good stuff from George Michalowski. We could talk Pitt basketball after the break at 412-928-9370. If you're a Pitt Hoops fan, give us a ring. And always, too, we welcome the Steelers talk as the black and gold head into the bye week 6-2. And in first place in the AFC North. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money from you. More from you if you want to call in after the break. We're with you until 10:35 tonight. Nightly sports call with Bob Pompiani, the legend, and Andrew Filippone, who's also a legend. Two legends on KDK Plus and 93.7 The Fan. Nightly sports call is at 10:35. We're taking you up until then. I'm Jack Hillgrove. Fan Evening Show on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Texter 4 minutes ago got a kick out of me calling that guy a jackaloon. Glad to provide some comic relief on a Tuesday night. You might be able to call me a jackaloon. My name's Jack, Jack Hillgrove, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, with you until 10:35 tonight. Just got done talking to George Michalowski of Pittsburgh Sports Now and the Portal Report, getting ready for a Pitt Hoop season. Monday, November 4th, against Radford. Joel Nelson, what is the Radford name?
I think we talked about this the one time.
I think we did, too. They're the Highlanders.
I still forget it, though.
It's like deja.
That's right, Baldwin, the connection.
Yes,
there.
Like deja vu. It's like, because I told myself, I'm going to ask him. I'm going to bring him in. I'm going to ask him. And then I'm like, wait, I already did that.
Do you know where they're located?
No, do you?
Because I don't.
Okay, well.
Let's both take a guess. I'm going to say somewhere in, the state of Virginia.
That sounds right. I was going to say, in Radford, Virginia. Which is located?
Is it near Roanoke? Or
it's just southwest of Blacksburg, right above I-81.
Okay, because I was at Virginia Tech with some buddies a couple weekends ago. So
okay.
that's probably why.
I would have drove right by it when I visited my buddy Ed DiOrio. I would have taken 81 through Roanoke, Blacksburg, all the way to Withville, Virginia, and then Johnson City, Tennessee, all that good stuff. 412-928-9370 is the number. We're open to any and all topics this evening. Just got done talking Pitt basketball. Had some stuff set aside for that for this particular segment, but KP is on hold. He wants to talk Steelers. What's up, man?
Hey, man. How you doing? Good evening.
Good evening. What's going on?
I just kind of wanted to elaborate on the Steelers, number two receiver situation. I kind of do, in fact, feel like in order to put us over the top and kind of get us to win a playoff game or maybe even two, we do need to add someone at another receiver spot. My only issue is that now that Houston has receiver injury problems,
yep.
You know, our market is going to be very, very small. And our window of opportunity is going to be very, very small. I just think realistically during a bye week, if we don't do something, then it's kind of just game over. I pretty much think we have until Saturday to do something.
You mean game over as far as like being able to get it done, not like their season's down the crapper
Right. Our season's definitely not down the crapper, but if we're serious about pressing the gas and not pressing the brakes, I think by Saturday, Potter needs to be a receiver brought in here. Now, there was one guy in particular I was thinking about. He's injured right now, but the team that he's on is like, what, 1-6 or 2-whatever? But Gabe Davis wouldn't be a bad acquisition. I know he has a bum shoulder, but, I mean, if Gabe Davis, we can get him at 90%, he's very productive. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't hate it. I also wouldn't hate Darius Slayton either, based off of what I saw last night, but it seems like the Giants need to be blown away and want to hold on to him, and maybe last night and what he did against the Steelers had a little bit to do with that. My thing, KP, and I'll ask you this, are you comfortable with giving up maybe a second or a third round pick?
I mean, honestly, our drafts recently have been so hit or miss. I mean, I don't know.
Because my thing about it is the second round pick last year was Zach Frazier, and Zach Frazier might end up being a Pro Bowl center as a rookie. And if you depart that, you don't give yourself a chance to find another person like that at a different spot. Now, that was my whole thing when I was on the air last week, and I said, don't trade for a receiver. That's not worth it. Second or a third round pick, I'm not comfortable giving one up. But after what I saw for the return on Diontae Johnson today, if they're able to do something like that, I am all for it.
Now, let me ask you this. Would you give up Najee Harris in the third round for a top tier receiver?
I would not.
Out there.
I would not. I wouldn't. I would even consider Najee Harris as untouchable gets right now for how he's played the last 3 weeks. I mean, the running game is the bread and butter.
Do you think he's getting an extension after the season, though? Because they did decline his option.
I do. I think a lot of the reason why they declined the option was because they wanted to, you know, have him be on a prove it year, and he is proving the hell out of it right now, number one. And I would even go as far as saying number two, there might be some regret from the Steelers front office on not picking up that fifth year option for $6.7 million. Because by the way that Najee's running right now, $6.7 million, if that's able to be sustained for 2025, is peanuts compared to what you're getting out of him right now.
Right. Now, one last thing, and then we'll borrow time here.
No, you're
good. Do you think they get something done realistically? I mean, it doesn't really seem like it's extremely realistic, but do you like think that maybe they will make a move? I was kind of thinking about John Metchie from Houston, but now that I know that Stephon Diggs and the other guy are down, that's pretty much dead fish in the water also.
I would, KP, I'd go like 60-40 that they do. I think that with Russell Wilson now mixed into the fold and his ability to spread the football around and be efficient and accurate and dynamic, especially last night, I think that that's proven to them, like, okay, we've got this guy that can still sling it. If we get him another weapon, it might put us over the hump. Now that Russell Wilson, I think, has proven to the Steelers that he can still play, and I think that'll entice them more to go out and make a move. But the 40%, to me, if they don't, all stems from more teams. San Francisco, now Houston, that need to be into the fold. Kansas City, maybe again after the D-Hop trade. The Steelers might have to outbid a couple of more teams. And
now, one more question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that Garrett Wilson might want to be out of New York, or New York wants to get rid of Garrett Wilson? And would you take Garrett Wilson?
Now, that's an interesting point. I would take Garrett Wilson. I would trade a second-round pick for Garrett Wilson if they were able to do it. It probably would take a first. I'd be hesitant about a first-round pick. But if I'm Garrett Wilson, man, I don't want to play with Aaron Rodgers. KP, good stuff, man. Thanks for the call. A lot of good discussion back and forth there. Love to see it. Would love to have more of it at 412-928-9370. I mean, Joel, if you're anybody other than Devontae Adams, would you want to play with Aaron Rodgers right now?
The Jets are what, 2-6?
Yep.
Gosh, I don't know, dude. You know, they get rid of Robert Saleh, and they still haven't won since, I'm pretty sure, right? So, because they were 2-3.
Albrich's first game was that Monday night game against the
Bills. They almost won that game, but still, they were close enough and in position where they could have snuck that one out. I don't know, man. Not right now. They don't have any momentum.
They don't. They do not. And Aaron Rodgers and company are struggling, and I can't say that I'm upset to see it. Now, Garrett Wilson's interesting because he's young, still on a rookie deal, but a guy that you would eventually have to pay. Now, if you're in this window where you want to consider it maybe a 2 to 3 or 4 year window because Russell Wilson is on the wrong side of 30. Maybe. And then you'd have to assess to yourself, okay, are we going to pay Wilson or are we going to pay Pickens? Because that might kind of cross over. That might present a challenge. And also, too, like, are you really looking to go pedal to the metal for a guy like Garrett Wilson and give up a first-round pick in a year where the Steelers, I think, in the first round could go out and draft a receiver like Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State that would be plug-and-play wide receiver two almost immediately opposite George Pickens next year. And it's a deep running back class, too. Like, if you don't sign Najee Harris in this offseason, you can go out and get a guy like Nicholas Singleton from Penn State or Judkins if he were to slip to the first round from Ohio State. Or if you were really, really feeling aggressive, you could put a trade package together and trade up and get Ashton Gentry from Boise State. I'm just trying to say that the depth at wide receiver and running back in this draft class is so deep, it seems like, to where you can take a second round pick and get a Najee Harris replacement if you don't want to re-sign him or assign him to an extension. Or you can draft a wide receiver too, opposite that. And if you give up one of those picks, you sacrifice that opportunity. From my neck of the woods, Jason in the burb of the burg, Steubenville. What's up, man?
What's going on, sir?
How are you?
Jason Jenkins for the River Network.
Oh, Jason, what's up, man? How you doing, buddy?
Okay, how are you doing, buddy?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was just calling, although I'm not a Steeler fan, but I'm a sports fan.
Sure.
And the conversation tonight, what do you think about going after Keenan Allen? I mean, they really don't. They've got Roma Duse, the rookie. They've got DJ Moore, Cole Kmet. They can afford to give up a Keenan Allen, and maybe the Steelers could, steal him with a third, fourth, maybe, later on draft pick.
So the only thing that kind of entices me about that, well, two things. Number one, Keenan Allen, veteran presence. That's a guy that I would like to have in a locker room with George Pickens as George becomes more relevant and more dynamic as a young player in this league. And number two, the Steelers have done business with Chicago and it's boded well for them in the past. Chase Claypool for a second round pick that turned into Joey Porter Jr. and Justin Fields for a sixth round pick. So I wouldn't hate it. And if you could get a guy like Keenan Allen for something similar that the Ravens traded for Deontay Johnson, I think I would welcome that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, the veteran presence with George Pickens and Calvin Austin. You know, I know Russell Wilson is short term, but what he's putting the ball up for Pickens. He's throwing the ball deep with Calvin Austin. You bring Allen there, and you probably get him cheap because, like you said, they've done business with Chicago before. That's actually what made me think of that.
Yeah. All right, Jason. Well, good to hear you, man. Thanks for giving us a call.
All right.
And how do we feel about our high school football teams as week one in Ohio approaches?
The Big Red will roll. There are going to be a couple other teams that are going to be a little bit upset, but I'm just, great year for teams like, Indian Creek and some of the other teams that have improved greatly, but look for the Big Red to roll this weekend.
I think so, too. Jason, appreciate you as always. Thanks for the call. Probably a bunch of people out there listening, like, why are we talking about Ohio Valley High School football right now? Well, that guy's from Steubenville who just called. I know him pretty well. And I work in Steubenville, WTOV9, cover high school football. Pretty, pretty in-depth. So, had to sneak that in there. Steve in Coriopolis, what's up, man?
Yeah, I want to change it up a little bit. Everybody's talking about the offensive line
sure.
And the wide receiver. What do you think about Queen's play this year? I think
it hasn't been worth the $13 million a year that they're paying them, that's for sure, but I think it's gotten better.
You think it's gotten better?
You go back to the first couple of weeks when that guy was missing tackles left and right. Yeah, I think he's becoming more comfortable in this system. Sure.
I've been watching him a lot. I disagree. Plus, I see him getting out the way a lot, like he doesn't want to make that dick tackle. Most of the yards that's going against us are going right at him. And I'm just thinking that maybe I know they're going to make a trade, and you just said how much money they're paying him. But I think he needs to step up, and that would help our defense a lot.
Yeah, no, it would. And I think, Steve, thanks for the call. I do think he's getting better. And you say that about Patrick Queen. And yeah, I agree. But I think a lot of what we say about Patrick Queen and assess about him is that Landon Roberts is so balls to the wall when it comes to the inside linebacker position. That guy is all over the field. And Patrick Queen's just a little bit of a different player than that. And I think he's gotten better. But right now, to answer his question, no, I'm not thrilled with $13 million a year for that guy and what you're getting out of him. Couple of texts. Would you know if DK Metcalf is possible to acquire? The Seahawks are 500 in an NFC West that stinks and is quite literally up for grabs with anybody in that division. Arizona and San Francisco are and Seattle are all 4-4, and the Rams are 3-4. Like if you held a gun to my head and said pick a winner in the NFC West, I don't think I would be able to, because it is as up for grabs as you can get halfway through the regular season. So I would have to imagine that everybody is going to be sticking put in that division, if not looking to add more because they want to put themselves above the rest. Another text. Love that you just name dropped Ed DiOrio. Taught with his mom for 20 years. Were you in Vegas with them for the Steelers game? I was. Proud member of the Nasty Boy crew with Donnie Football and the Waynesburg guys. Ed DiOrio is actually my roommate, texter for 3 years in college and one of my dearest, dearest friends to this day. So shout out Eddie, who worked with us at TOV, now down at WLOS in Asheville, North Carolina, who, another shameless plug to my friend Jolie, when Asheville was hit with all of that stuff with Hurricane Helene, his station's an ABC affiliate, and they asked him to the one morning on Good Morning America. He reported with the one guy from GMA, was on national television. So I'll give my buddy a nice shout out there. It was pretty cool.
That's incredible.
Seeing your boy on national TV, waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was funny. Like, I told my parents about it because my parents know him. And I guess on Saturday mornings, GMA is only from, I think, 7 to 8, and then Channel 4 has local news at 8 o'clock, and he was on at 8, so a bunch of people in the Pittsburgh area weren't able to see it, but shout out to Eddie. 412-928-9370 is the number. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Coming up, the worst Halloween candies of all time. I have a couple on my mind. Joel Nelson, hopefully you've got a couple on your mind as we get to the next segment. And I want to hear from you on the topic at 412-928-9370. Tons of good discussion later on in the hour about the Steelers. If you want to keep that rolling, we can too. You know the number. It's Jack Hillgrove on the Fan Evening Show. Final score at PPG Paints Arena, Wild 5, Penguins 3. The Pens are 3-7-1. Former beloved Penguin Marc-Andre Fleury, 26 saves on 29 shots against. It's a save percentage of .897. Gets the win, plays the whole game. Final game in the Berg as the Flower is on his retirement tour, it seems. Joel, would you call Marc-Andre Fleury a top five goalie of all time, or is top five a little aggressive?
I don't know hockey well enough where I could make a safe argument, but right now, if I had to take a guess, I would say maybe top 10, but not top five. It's close.
Yeah, I as far as pure ability, I would think that top five might be aggressive, but he's second all time in wins. You also want to talk about just an absolute ridiculous record to break. Was that you and I talking about that one night? Or was it maybe me and Charlie?
What was it anyways?
I was just saying, like, the just ridiculous sports records that have broken. Marty Brodeur, 691 career wins is as a goalie in hockey, probably won't ever be touched again.
Yeah, that was you and I. That was a really good one.
Yeah, that's one I don't think that we touched, but that one I don't think will. Like, to put it in perspective, Brodeur, 691, that's the most wins of any goalie ever. Fleury is second all-time in wins at 552. Patrick Waugh, 551. Luongo, 489. Ed Belfour, 484. Henrik, 459. Curtis Joseph, 454. Terry Sawchuk, 445. That is the top eight. And you've got some active guys that I think might have a say in it. I think Fleury, when it's all said and done, is safe top 10, and there's an argument for top 5. Because you look, you go back and you look at the Stanley Cups, and he's responsible for one of the greatest saves in Stanley Cup final history against Detroit and Nicklas Lidström. But the 16 Cup and the 17 Cup, you give a lot of credit to Matt Murray for as well. So I think that might hold him back in that discussion as well. If you have an opinion on it, 412-928-9370. Texter just now, can the Pens somehow get Fleury back? I can dream. LOL. That would be something. If they were in a position where they were buyers, maybe. That'd be pretty cool, but they stink. And I'm not sure how advantageous it would be for them to go out and get him back, no matter how nostalgic or good it makes us feel as Penguin fans. I just don't think that's reasonable. Tonight is Swan Song in Pittsburgh. But the bigger story in the grand scheme of things is the Penguins lost their 6th game in a row, and there are problems. There are problems when it comes to this hockey team. All right. Joel, I'll let you go first. We'll just each list 3, and we'll talk about how gross they are if you have 3. Everybody talks about the best Halloween candies this time of year. Kids are getting ready to trick-or-treat around the area in a couple of days, if not sooner. Let's go with a couple of Halloween candies that you dislike.
Well, my 3, Jack, would be Laffy Taffy.
Oh, okay.
Twizzlers and Butterfingers.
I'm with you on 2 of the 3. Laffy Taffy.
The one thing I'll give it is, I think, you know, it's got some unique flavors, good variety of them, but it just doesn't stick with me, you know?
One of my, like, favorite flavors is that artificial banana flavor.
See, I feel like that's the one I would like the least.
Oh, see, I love
it. It's weird.
Banana Laffy Taffy, I think, is phenomenal. Like, there's an ice cream shop in St. Clairsville, Ohio. Shout out Kirk's, that makes homemade ice cream, and they have homemade banana ice cream.
With that sounds like, good.
Artificial banana flavoring, and it is. I saw you. Did you wince at it? You don't like the banana flavor?
No, just kind of like, wow, that is unique. That is uniquely cool. Yeah. I should try that sometime.
Yeah, no, it's. I think it's phenomenal. But Twizzlers, yeah, and I think that might be a hot take. I am not a fan. I'm not a fan of the texture, and I'm not a fan of the strawberry flavor, the generic strawberry flavor that it comes in now. You ever see the multicolored ones?
Those like little rainbow ones?
Yeah.
Those must be pretty cool.
I think they're good. I think those are good. But Twizzlers, like the OG Twizzler, I'm not a fan of. I will go with Bitto Honey. Terrible. Milk Duds. Terrible. And candy corn. I think sucks. I think candy corn is repulsive. And I think it tastes like gummy chalk. That's where I come down on candy corn. Where do you...
I would agree with you on that, on the candy corn. I wonder if it gets its hype around Halloween because of the color orange and the yellow and the white as well, but the main color being orange. I wonder why that is. You know, maybe that's why it's so popular at Halloween, but I don't know. It just, and maybe it's small, so you can have a lot of them, but I don't get it either. They're just, it just doesn't stick, you know?
We also, and this is part of the reason why it enticed me to trick-or-treat elsewhere growing up, and you get, you know, friends and you want to hang out with your friends on Halloween. We had a neighbor up the street that was every year apples. Like, come on.
You could at least, you know, compromise and go with candied apples. I don't know if that's a lot of time and effort or whatever, but, you know.
Yeah, like, I always
make it a little more exciting, I guess, right?
I always see the ones at, like, fairs or whatever, and they coat them in, like, M&Ms and
Bingo.
Stuff, too. Those are
yes.
phenomenal. But, like, come on. And then the one year, I don't know if you have, like, maybe a memory of something you got in a trick-or-treat bag that you were like, really? One of mine was a travel-sized toothbrush, floss, and mouthwash.
I was just going to say, something for the once you're done with all of your Halloween candy, little friendly reminder.
Yeah. You know what else is, I think, an underrated trick-or-treat item? And my grandparents, my mom's parents, used to give them out. Huggies.
Yes. The little The small, little drinks the size of your hand?
Yep, the barrels.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, I always thought Huggy was an underrated elite trick-or-treat item that, like, kind of defies the norm of candy. And you're like, all right, chug a blue Huggy. That was always the get about four or five of those in me at a birthday party. Texter just came in. Sonic shifted from real banana to fake banana shakes. I was so disappointed. I would have to disagree with you. There's a Steak and Shake in St. Clairsville, Ohio, too. It's one of the few remaining ones. And anytime I go down there, they have the artificial banana milkshake that I just crush. I mean, it's phenomenal. So good. I might be in the minority there, but I am big time on the artificial banana flavoring. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Check out the 24 Silverado 1500 at 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms and conditions at sunchevy.com. Low 58 tonight, highs up in the 80s potentially tomorrow. Beautiful, beautiful for the end of October. Bottom five, Jazz Chisholm at the plate. The Yankees up 5-4 after that Anthony Volpe home run. Chisholm just walked. So the Yankees first and second up a run with nobody out in game four of the World Series, trying to stay alive as the Dodgers look to close things out. So this thing could get really interesting here in game four of the World Series. But oh, you know what, Joel? I just remembered. It's just a meaningless game, according to our friend Steele, who called in about an hour ago. Just a meaningless game.
That's right.
Whatever.
Yep. Just a game.
Just a game. Doesn't matter. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan with you until about 10:35 tonight. Maybe a couple of minutes before we'll get out of there. So the nightly sports call with Pomp and Pony gets off on time. You can watch it on KDK Plus. Listen to it here on 93.7 The Fan. With you again until about 10:30. We'll talk a little bit more about the Steelers if you're up and you want to call in and talk about the receivers, how you're feeling about the bye week. We were talking Pit Hoops and Pit Football as well. All of that is on the table at 412-928-9370. With you for about another half hour, Jack Hillgrove on the Fan Evening Show. We'll be back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.